The Reverend Jesse Jackson was a member of Martin Luther King Jr.'s inner circle. Jackson would later become a key player in the civil rights movement. We sat down with him this weekend to talk about what this legal victory meant to the overall struggle to attain equal rights for African Americans. Reverend Jackson also recounted a conversation he had with Mrs. Parks.
I asked Mrs. Parks one time, why didn't you go to the back of the bus? You was facing loss of job, a life, a jail. She said, I thought about Emmett Till, I couldn't go back. And if Rosa Parks is metaphorically the mother of the modern civil rights movement, Thurgood Marshall would be the father of it. Claudette Colvin and Emmett Till would have been the children of it. And Dr. King, the prophet of it. Our struggle is a struggle for legal protection and to end oppressive laws. Slavery was a set of laws, and many actions took place by heroic persons and by mothers, but that system ended in 1865 with law. And then there was resistance to that system. The big battle legally was the Supreme Court decision of 1954, led by Thurgood Marshall and, of course, Constance Baker Motley in Houston and Dr. General Franklin and that team. When the law changed in 54, a young lady named Claudette Colvin, she sat down March the 2nd in Montgomery, 9 months before Rosa Parks. But she did not have the infrastructure of support that Rosa Parks had. When Rosa Parks sat down December 1st, she had met with Attorney Fred Gray the day of December 1st and days before that. So when she sat down, she knew that she'd be bailed out of jail. That was a legal infrastructure in place. After all, Mrs. Parks, projected as this submissive, silent little seamstress, in fact, was the opposite. She was a bona fide freedom fighter. Mrs. Parks joined NAACP when she was 29 years old, at the time when you would lose your job if you were an NAACP member, considered to be subversive. You could not be a school teacher, a public employee, and be an NAACP member during that time. She meant to join the freedom movement. She sought the right to vote in 1942. They said she didn't pass the literacy test. Well, she tried it again. The second time, they said you didn't pass the literacy test. Third time, they said she didn't pass it. She said, I memorized the test. Here are the questions and the answers. She got her voting rights card in 1945. Dr. King was only 16 years old at that time. This was 10 years before Montgomery and 20 years before Selma. So when she sat down, she was testing the legal case of 1954, and she won that legal case 13 months later. So when people say movement is a move to end states' rights oppression that invariably requires federal intervention for protection of all citizens.
Reverend, talk to me about the resolve that had to be of the people of Montgomery. That's the interesting point that I think gets missed often. And was there something about Montgomery? Could this have happened anywhere?
It could have happened anywhere, except there was a greater degree of organization in Montgomery, a relatively small town. They had a bus boycott in Baton Rouge in 53, but didn't have the infrastructure of organization. After all, Mrs. Parks had gone to Highlander Folk School and had studied civil rights, social, and labor struggle. She knew Ella Baker. She knew A. Philip Randolph. Edie Nixon was a Pullman porter. So it was the degree of organization. She was NAACP secretary and U.S. NAACP youth director. So what the continuous said is she was a seamstress. She didn't get arrested for sewing. She was a bona fide freedom fighter. So when it is said that when Mrs. Parks was arrested, you locked up the wrong person now, they were not referring to a character which did not have blemish. They were saying, you've now locked up the most famous resisting freedom fighter in town.
Reverend, let me ask you this as relates to where we are today. You, not only steeped in knowledge, obviously, of the civil rights movement, but you were there. You were part of it. You were within the inner circle. When you sit in 2005, are you happy? Is this what you envisioned?
No, we've changed the face of segregation. It's hard to steal pumpkin venom. Its brain still thinks in states' rights terms. The Brown Board of Education wouldn't have won 9-0 with this Supreme Court. This court was sent that case back to Montgomery or back to Kansas. So when Bush stacks the courts with states' rights judges at every level on up to the Supreme Court, it is a radical threat to workers, labor, and civil rights. So what is most threatening today is that, one, that we seem not to be as aware of states' rights as we ought to be, number one. But number two, that the civil rights struggle's progress is very threatened today by, in 55, we could go to a higher court, to the federal government, to the Congress, to the Supreme Court to get relief. Now the states' rights control the House and Senate, Supreme Court, and the White House. So they are poised to take back virtually every right gained in the last 50 years. Where are we in Alabama, a state 35% black in year 2005? Alabama blacks incarcerated five times the rate of whites. 14% of Alabama voting age population blacks are disenfranchised. They've been to jail and can't vote no more. 25% of black males are incarcerated. 19 appellate judges, zero black. 15 federal judges, two black. 220 Alabama judges, 16 are black. There's district attorneys, 40, zero are black. Sheriffs, 67, 8 are black. So the gap between blacks and whites on the buses have been eliminated, but the gaps in the judicial system and the education system, those gaps, in fact, are very, not only are they wide, but they're not being decisively resisted. It is as if we were embarrassed by the signs. The signs of color and white were certainly very visible signs of that were humiliating to African Americans and embarrassing the whites at some point. When those signs came down, it only changed the signs, not the infrastructure. So you end slavery, but those who gain benefits from being slave masters didn't lose any property. They didn't lose anything. So you look at the private sector, you look at predatory exploitation, banks and CRA, ownership of radio and TV and beverage and construction companies. You see just how much further we have to go. And I think we must measure, because our struggle is not just for freedom, it is for equality. Our struggle is for equality.
Are we misguided with the notion that when we were struggling in the 50s and 60s, there was a struggle for a collective movement of people to reach a certain point? Now it seems as though there are individuals who are allowed to move, but the collective seems stalled.
Well, the system always let a few people through. And it is our struggle to get equal protection under the law for all Americans. Our struggle remains the collective struggle to end race discrimination. Whether you are light skin or dark skin, PhD or no D, that's a race spotlight on your back.
That was Reverend Jesse Jackson, president of the Rainbow Push Coalition.